Chapter 3. With plenty of money, as any honest man would. Now there were two tolerably rich girls in our parts. Miss Magdalene Cruddy, with £12,000, and, to do her justice, as plain a girl as ever I saw, and Miss Mary Waters, a fine, tall, plump, smiling, peach-cheeked, golden-haired, white-skinned lass, with only 10. Mary Waters lived with her uncle, the doctor, who had helped me into the world, and who was trusted with this little orphan charge very soon after. My mother, as you have heard, was so fond of Bates, and Bates so fond of little Mary, that both, at first, were almost always in our house, and I used to call her my little wife, as soon as I could speak, and before she could walk almost. It was beautiful to see us, the neighbor said. Well, when her brother, the lieutenant of an India ship, came to be captain, and actually gave Mary £5,000 when she was about 10 years old, and promised her £5,000 more, there was a great talking, and bobbing, and smiling between the doctor and my parents, and Mary and I were left together more than ever, and she was told to call me her little husband. And she did. And it was considered a settled thing from that day. She was really amazingly fond of me. Can anyone call me mercenary after that? Though Miss Cruddy had 12,000, and Mary only 10, 5 in hand, and 5 in the bush, I stuck faithfully to Mary. As a matter of course, Miss Cruddy hated Miss Waters. The fact was, Mary had all the country dangling after her, and not a soul would come to Magdalene, for all her 12,000 L. I used to be attentive to her, though, as it's always useful to be, and Mary would sometimes laugh, and sometimes cry at my flirting with Magdalene. This I thought proper very quickly to check. "Airy," said I, "you know that my love for you is disinterested, for I am faithful to you, though Miss Cruddy is richer than you. Don't fly into a rage, then, because I pay her attentions, when you know that my heart and my promise are engaged to you. The fact is, to tell a little bit of a secret, there is nothing like the having two strings to your bow. Who knows? Thought I Mary may die, and then where are my 10,000 L? So I used to be very kind indeed to Miss Cruddy, and well it was that I was so. For when I was 20 and Mary 18, I'm blessed if news did not arrive that Captain Waters, who was coming home to England with all his money in rupees, had been taken ship, rupees, self and all by a French privateer, and Mary, instead of 10,000 L, had only 5,000 L, making a difference of no less than 350 L per annum betwixt her and Miss Cruddy. I had just joined my regiment, the famous North Bungay Fencibles, Colonel Craw commanding, when this news reached me, and you may fancy how a young man, in an expensive regiment and mess, having uniforms and what not to pay for, and a figure to cut in the world, felt at hearing such news. "Why, dearest Robert," wrote Miss Waters, "will deplore my dear brother's loss. But not, I am sure, the money which that kind and generous soul had promised me. I have still £5,000, and with this and your own little fortune I add 1,000 L. In the 5%. We shall be as happy and contented as possible." Happy and contented indeed. Didn't I know how my father got on with his 300 L a year, and how it was all he could do out of it to add 100 a year to my narrow income, and live himself. My mind was made up. I instantly mounted the coach, and flew to our village, to Mr. Cruddy's, of course. It was next door to Dr. Bates, but I had no business there. I found Magdalene in the garden. "Evans, Mr. Stubbs," said she, as in my new uniform I appeared before her, "I really did never such a handsome officer expect to see you." And she made, as if she would blush, and began to tremble violently. I led her to a garden seat. I seized her hand, it was not withdrawn. I pressed it, I thought the pressure was returned. I flung myself on my knees, and then I poured into her ear a little speech which I had made on the top of the coach. "Ivan, Miss Cruddy," said I, "idol of my soul. It was but to catch one glimpse of you, that I passed through this garden. I never intended to breathe a secret passion. Oh, no, of course not. Hitch was wearing my life away. You know my unfortunate pre-engagement that is broken, and forever. I am free, free, but to be your slave, your humblest, fondest, truest slave. And so on. Dot dot dot. Oh, Mr. Stubbs, said she, as I imprinted a kiss upon her cheek, I can't refuse you, but I fear you are a sad, naughty man. Dot dot dot. Absorbed in the delicious reverie which was caused by the dear creature's confusion, we were both silent for a while, and should have remained so for hours perhaps, so lost were we in happiness, had I not been suddenly roused by a voice exclaiming from behind us, "Don't cry, Mary. He is a swindling, sneaking scoundrel, and you are well rid of him." I turned round. Oh heaven, there stood Mary, weeping on Dr. Bates' arm, while that miserable apothecary was looking at me with the utmost scorn. The gardener, who had let me in, had told them of my arrival, and now stood grinning behind them. "Appearance," was my Magdalene's only exclamation, as she flounced by with the utmost self-possession, while I, glancing daggers at the spies, followed her. We retired to the parlor, where she repeated to me the strongest assurances of her love. I thought I was a made man. Alas! I was only an April fool. May. Restoration Day. As the month of May is considered, by poets and other philosophers, to be devoted by nature to the great purpose of love-making, I may as well take advantage of that season, and acquaint you with the result of my amours. Young, gay, fascinating, and an ensign, I had completely won the heart of my Magdalene. And as for Miss Waters and her nasty uncle the doctor, there was a complete split between us, as you may fancy, Miss pretending, forsooth, that she was glad I had broken off the match, though she would have given her eyes, the little minx, to have had it on again. But this was out of the question. My father, who had all sorts of queer notions, said I had acted like a rascal in the business. My mother took my part, in course, and declared I acted rightly, as I always did. And I got leave of absence from the regiment in order to press my beloved Magdalene to marry me out of hand, knowing, from reading and experience, the extraordinary mutability of human affairs. Besides, as the dear girl was 17 years older than myself, and as bad in health as she was in temper, how was I to know that the grim King of Terrors might not carry her off before she became mine? With the tenderest warmth, then, and most delicate ardor, I continued to press my suit. The happy day was fixed the ever-memorable 10th of May, 1792. The wedding clothes were ordered, and, to make things secure, I penned a little paragraph for the county paper to this effect. Arriage in high life. We understand that Ensign Stubbs, of the North Bungay Fencibles, and son of Thomas Stubbs, of Slopham Squiggle Esquire, is about to lead to the hymeneal altar the lovely and accomplished daughter of Solomon Cruddy Esquire, of the same place. A fortune of £20,000 is, we hear, the lady's portion. None but the brave deserve the fair. Apostrophe, dot 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 dot, have you informed your relatives, my beloved? Said I to Magdalene, one day after sending the above notice, will any of them attend at your marriage? Uncle Sam will, I dare say, said Miss Cruddy, dear mamma's brother. And who was your dear mamma? Said I. For Miss Cruddy's respected parent had been long since dead, and I never heard her name mentioned in the family. Magdalene blushed, and cast down her eyes to the ground. Amma was a foreigner, at last she said. And of what country? A German. Papa married her when she was very young. She was not of a very good family, said Miss Cruddy, hesitating. And what care I for family, my love? Said I, tenderly kissing the knuckles of the hand which I held. He must have been an angel who gave birth to you. She was a shoemaker's daughter. A German shoemaker. Hang 'em, thought I have had enough of them, and so broke up this conversation, which did not somehow please me. Dot 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 dot. Well, the day was drawing near. The clothes were ordered. The banns were read. My dear mama had built a cake about the size of a washing tub, and I was only waiting for a week to pass to put me in possession of £12,000 in the 5%, as they were in those days, heaven bless 'em. Little did I know the storm that was brewing, and the disappointment which was to fall upon the young man who really did his best to get a fortune. Oh, Robert, said my Magdalene to me, 2 days before the match was to come off, I have such a kind letter from Uncle Sam in London. I wrote to him as you wished. He says that he is coming down tomorrow, that he has heard of you often, and knows your character very well, and that he has got a very handsome present for us. What can it be, I wonder? Is he rich, my soul's adored? Says I, he is a bachelor, with a fine trade, and nobody to leave his money to. His present can't be less than £1,000. Says I, or, perhaps, a silver tea set, and some corner dishes, says she. But we could not agree to this. It was too little to mean for a man of her uncle's wealth, and we both determined it must be £1,000. Dear good uncle, he's to be here by the coach, says Magdalene. Let us ask a little party to meet him. And so we did, and so they came. My father and mother, old Cruddy in his best wig, and the parson who was to marry us the next day. The coach was to come in at 6. And there was the tea table, and there was the punch bowl, and everybody ready and smiling, to receive our dear uncle from London. 6 o'clock came, and the coach, and the man from the Green Dragon with a portmanteau, and a fat old gentleman walking behind, of whom I just caught a glimpse, a venerable old gentleman. I thought I'd seen him before. Then there was a ring at the bell, then a scuffling and bumping in the passage. Then old Cruddy rushed out, and a great laughing and talking, and how are you? And so on, was heard at the door. And then the parlor door was flung open, and Cruddy cried out with a loud voice, good people all, my brother-in-law, Mr. Stifflekind. Mr. Stifflekind. I trembled as I heard the name. Miss Cruddy kissed him, Mama made him a curtsy, and Papa made him a bow, and Dr. Snorter, the parson, seized his hand, and shook it most warmly. Then came my turn. That, says he. He is my dear good young friend from Dr. Schwissentales. Is this the young gentleman's honorable motor? Mama smiled, and made a curtsy, and this his fader? Sir and madam, you should be proud of such a son. And you my niece, if you have him for a husband you will be lucky, that is all. That think you, Broder Crody, and madam stops, I have made your son's boots. Ha ha! My mama laughed, and said, I did not know it, but I am sure, sir, he has as pretty a leg for a boot as any in the whole county. Old Stifflekind roared louder. Very nice leg, ma'am, and a very sheep boot too. That. Did you not know I make his boots? Perhaps you did not know something else too, perhaps you did not know, and here the monster clapped his hand on the table, and made the punch ladle tremble in the bowl, perhaps you did not know as that young man, that stops, that sneaking, paltry, squinting fellow, is as wicked as he is ugly. He bought a pair of boots from me, and never paid for them. That is noting, nobody never pays. But he bought a pair of boots, and called himself Lord Cornwallis. And I was fool enough to believe him once. But look you, niece Magdalene, I have got £5,000. If you marry him, I will not give you a penny. But look you what I will give you. I promised you a brisand, and I will give you these. And the old monster produced those very boots which Swishtail had made him take back. I didn't marry Miss Cruddy. I am not sorry for it though. She was a nasty, ugly, ill-tempered wretch, and I've always said so ever since. And all this arose from those infernal boots, and that unlucky paragraph in the county paper. I'll tell you how. In the first place, it was taken up as a quiz by one of the wicked, profligate, unprincipled organs of the London press, who chose to be very facetious about the heritage in high life, and made all sorts of jokes about me, and my dear Miss Cruddy. Secondly, it was read in this London paper by my mortal enemy, Bunting, who had been introduced to old Stiffelkind's acquaintance by my adventure with him, and had his shoes made regularly by that foreign upstart. Thirdly, he happened to want a pair of shoes mended at this particular period, and as he was measured by the disgusting old High Dutch cobbler, he told him his old friend Stubbs was going to be married. And to whom? Said old Stiffelkind. O a woman with geld, I will take my oath. Yes, says Bunting, a country girl, a Miss Magdalene Carity or Crotty, at a place called Slawfum Squiggle. Slawfum Schwiegel, bursts out the dreadful bootmaker. Ain God, main God, does jet nicked. I tell you, sir, it is no go. Miss Crotty is my niece. I will go down myself. I will never let her marry that good-for-nothing swindler and thief. Such was the language that the scoundrel ventured to use regarding me. June. Marrowbones and Cleavers. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.